podcast that was Christmas.
Hello, and welcome to episode 44 of If This Is a Podcast, Then What's Christmas? Today, I'm chatting to Libby Brockhoff of Odysseus Arms, and formerly of lots of other places, including Mother and GGT. I think I keep pronouncing it Odysseus's Arms. I think in my head, we talk about this a little bit, it was some classical reference to some story or something or other that I hadn't heard of, and I thought, oh, this must be Odysseus's Arms. You'll discover why it's Odysseus Arms later on, so that should all be a little bit clearer. And apologies for pronouncing it with an extra apostrophe S, Libby. So Libby is one of the people who founded Mother, and in that capacity, she gets to be one of the people in my kind of sporadic, went on for a while, then had a bit of a blip startup series, partly because of Mother and then partly because of Odysseus Arms. We talk about both of those. But Mother, as a truly, truly influential, game-changing, utterly different, completely novel, original ad agency, I think is incredible. I mean, I think it's really difficult to quite wrap your head around, if you weren't there at the time, how weird it was to even have an agency called Mother and not called something like Blenkinsop, Hardaway and Chaffinch, or whatever most agencies were called in those days. There was an agency called Mother, and it made calling your agency a single word, a noun, whatever, cool. So anyone from Iris or Inferno or God knows what else, other names. And most of the names these days, they're not three founders and that's it. So that was one of the big changes, but there were lots and lots of other ones. And Mother really blazed a trail. And you'll hear in a lot of these stories, despite the enormous influence, obviously, of Robert Savile and Mark Waite, and the planner who, Steph Calcraft, I believe, who will revolutionize it too. But Libby's influence in it was large, very large, and in ways that you may not really be aware of. So have a listen and find out how and why you can set up an agency in whatever way you want. You can tear up the rule book, you can blaze your own trail, you can do whatever you want, and in doing so, create one of the great agencies, I guess, really in the history of British advertising. It's certainly been one of the very, very best of the last 20 years. So thanks for that, Libby, and thanks very much for chatting to me. So hi, Libby. Thanks very much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Ben. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you a bit. I have no idea why you want to hear about the past. Usually everybody, given my zip code out here in San Francisco, wants me to predict what's happening in the future, but I'm happy to go with you on the ride today.
Well, we might get into some future things as well. I don't know. We'll see where the conversation goes, but it's nice to be able to say good morning to somebody because we're actually in the same time zone, which is a huge relief to me. Usually I'm talking to people 8 hours away.
I know, and I think that's a bit unfair because I keep thinking about all these English people. You'd be phoning them at night, and they're a bit drunk, and so they sound really good, and they have all these really good ideas, whereas it's sort of like first thing in the morning here, and I'm not actually sure if I can even talk, but I think they have an unfair advantage with the pub scene.
They do. It's not fair. Well, you can just pretend you're drunk, and we'll carry on as we are.
We'll do.
Okay. So I do tend to sort of go into the past, mainly because I think what I want to do is give anyone who's either starting or wants to know how to do this at the beginning maybe some inspiration or some ideas as to how other people did what they did. And I like to start with how and indeed why you even got into the business, because everyone seems to have a different story.
I feel really fortunate, actually. At my sort of primary school, they had an exchange program where you had to go and do a bit of, real job experience. And I was lucky enough to find a woman named Mia Bosna who let me come into her studio. And she was a graphic artist and illustrator. And I fucked everything up in her studio because I knew absolutely nothing about what I was doing. I had no training. I just knew that I really enjoyed my art classes and I thought it was a place to start. I was thinking about it today and, you know, I was never exposed to art in any way. I never went to an art museum till I was 21, simply because nobody in my family was really into it. And the schools that I went to didn't really you know, provide any of that kind of exposure. So it was just something that I truly enjoyed, truly felt happy doing. And so I was lucky enough to end up in this studio, which is genius because now that I own my own company, I meet so many people every day who come to me and say, oh, I want to be in advertising. I'm so excited. And they've never sat in an advertising office. They've never had any exposure whatsoever. So I let a lot of people into my shop. And, you know, recently, like in the last couple years, I've let people that have been to the Olympics in my office, like veterans, people who would never have any exposure to an ad agency, because I truly appreciated that. And once I was in this woman's studio, I was hooked. Of course, I had no idea whether this was anything I would be able to maintain because I didn't really have any influences, but I thought, what the hell, let me try. So, you know, I'm a big advocate of getting people into internships and helping them. And it's a sort of a constant passion of mine. And I always have a few people on the side that I'm trying to get into various places. So, that was something that really helped me very much.
Is there something you think about that situation, about that place, that appealed to you? Because you could have, I guess, been exposed to like a bus driver or you know, merchant banking or something. Why did it interest you, do you think?
Absolutely. I think that right away I knew that I wanted to be around people who were constantly solving problems, who were creative, who didn't see things in a straightforward way. And, you know, those people always seemed to not be stuck in anything that they did. And so that was something that appealed to me and, you know, has always appealed to me.
Cool. So after that kind of exposure, what did you then see a path next to be able to be that person yourself? What happened after that?
Yeah, I mean, just in general, I'd like to say I feel extremely lucky. I mean, I have been able to work in the most creative shops across the globe. I have no idea how I got this lucky. But, you know, my next exposure after that was on my own, without any guidance, I found this incredible university. And what was so cool about it is it was an advertising communications program, and it was led by someone with an incredible amount of passion. He was this crazy Cajun guy. His name is Ray Nichols, and pretty much most of the people running a lot of the cool shops in America right now have graduated from his program. It's not really known as, you know, as well as the Creative Circus and all these kind of other ad programs, because it's actually within a university. But in fact, a lot of really famous people right now that have done great work came out of his program. And he's probably still today one of the most passionate people for this industry. And not only, you know, passionate, but he knew absolutely everything about it. I mean, he had every Bill Birnbach ad in sort of cellophane wrapped up and preserved and, you know, really hanging around somebody who was that passionate about communication. It's infectious. And, you know, once you were already inspired to do it, people just within our program dedicated themselves to it. I mean, just to give you an idea, this is a true story. It sounds a bit sad now, but literally it wasn't until my junior year in that program that I had ever been to any kind of college party or partaked in any kind of outside entertainment. I completely dedicated myself to it because it was such an interesting program. There was so much to do and solve, and it really wasn't necessary to do anything else. He also had a cut program. It was it was you were ranked in the program on a daily basis, and you were also cut out of the program every year. So just to give you an idea, that 5,000 of us started in the program, and only 5 of us were allowed to graduate.
Oh my God!
So it was extremely rigorous. But he was really trying to give you an indication of what it was going to be like if you wanted a career in advertising. So it was, you know, that really got me excited about what was possible and how, you know, in advertising, you could kind of creep your way into all these living rooms across the country and be able to entertain people. And it was fascinating to me.
And which university was that?
It's the University of Delaware.
Yeah, that sounds like a really unusual kind of location for something like that to happen.
But people like Carl Lieberman, who run Wieden and Kennedy in New York, have come from there. Franklin Tipton, my partner at Odysseus Arms, Kirk Sauter. I mean, the list really goes on and on.
Okay. So were you one of the 5 who graduated that course then?
I actually did.
Wow.
I was one of the 5.
Amazing. And then did you have a lot of, say, industry contact during the course, or were you kind of, was it just in the university?
That was actually a big part of our program. So we were only a few hours away from New York, and yeah, we spent a huge amount of time going to New York, meeting with so many professionals who had graduated from our program, and were really like a special ops team. Anybody who's graduated from there, we know them. It's Semper Fi. We know what each of us went through. So you can pretty much ring anybody up who actually survived the program, and they will help you in some way. So we spent time not only going and meeting and talking to all these people in New York, but we would go to all the art museums, all the advertising exhibits. So we spent an extensive amount of time in New York City.
Well, yeah, that must have been, you know, I guess a hugely beneficial part of the course.
Absolutely.
Did the contacts you made in that part of the process then lead to what you did after you left that university?
Not really. They were much more inspirational than sort of impacting, you know, our future. But in terms of, you know, actually getting a job, I mean, I think that was the most important part. We, you know, myself and my partner got very inspired by British advertising much before we actually moved there. And a lot of that use, you know, had to do with advertising agencies used to actually have libraries. I don't know if you remember that yourself.
Yeah.
But it was the way that you could sort of access things, whether it be award shows and all that. And so we actually sort of lifted all the DNAD reels, and that's how we spent a lot of nights. So before I actually moved to England, I had pretty much known all of the advertising that had existed prior to that, and a lot of the sense of humor and what went on there. And I think that that had a large impact on me. So just, you know, working at a great agency and that access to that material was really important.
And so in the moving to the UK, do you think that came from reading those books and going, this is where I want to be? Or was there another reason why you ended up in the UK?
It would probably make a really good story if I said yes, but no, I got extremely lucky. They also, you know, the UK is so generous with their time off. So, my partner was actually asked to, help somebody with their sabbatical. So, if you can believe it, an advertising creative was being given 6 months off, Simon Brotherson. He's a great creative in London, and he needed someone to fill in for him. So essentially my partner got a job transfer there just for 6 months, and then we ended up staying for 8 years, but it was a great way to get over there.
But so your partner goes over there with a job, and you I guess go along too. And then what happens when you land in London?
Absolutely. absolutely. I got really, really fat from eating chocolate biscuits.
What was your favorite chocolate biscuit?
Hobnobs, of course.
Of course. Now they do, I've just discovered this morning they do orange hobnobs. I'm really excited to go back to England in at Christmas and eat orange hobnobs because I think that
I
was
thought the, those were really old, the orange ones.
Oh, I don't think I've ever come across them. Maybe I just didn't have my eyes open. But I was also a chocolate home wheat and Jaffa cake kind of person. So, okay, maybe.
Right. Well, yeah, my partner gave me those when I first arrived. And I thought, well, there's pretty much, you know, nothing about this country that I can understand. And I'll just sort of lay that out for you. So, for instance, I went to visit him at work. And his partner said, "Are you all right?" And he kept saying, "Are you all right?" And I could not understand this English. I knew I was in a country that spoke the same language, but I could not hear the words, "Are you all right?" And he was just saying hi, obviously. And I was like, wow, there's basically no way I'm going to get a job here. And then I went back and I couldn't figure out the boiler system in the English flats. You know, this apparently this pilot light needed to be lit, and there was no way I could figure that out, and calling British Gas was a nightmare. And it kind of went on from there. I tried to order a sandwich at the sandwich shop, and I made the mistake of asking for tomato, and because I did not say tomato, this guy sort of like threw the sandwich. I mean, this was like the mid-90s, so there were actually English people in London at that time, and they did not like Americans at all. So it was a really super rough place to start, and you know, the recession was still in place pretty much, and you know, much of Soho Square was completely shut down, boarded up. It was a really rough place to start. And then I was fortunate enough to go to GGT and met Robert Saville, and my life had kind of changed forever. I mean, having said that, I did say earlier, I was so fortunate. I've always worked at amazing places. So when I was in the States, I worked at Chiat Day in New York. And Jay Chiat, I was still part of all of that when we brought in the first Apple Macintosh, and he explained how we were going to be able to expand our creativity and work remotely. And that was incredibly mind-blowing, life-changing. Lee Clow came to our office a lot. I also worked at Kirschenbaum and Bond in New York, and it was, you know, a free-for-all. It was incredibly creative, and people like Bill Oberlander and Richard Kirschenbaum helped me a ton. So I had done a lot also before I came to the UK and been exposed to a lot of great people that really cemented sort of what was going to be everything of what my career has kind of, you know, evolved to. But back to the UK, I was fortunate enough to meet Robert, and, you know, I was given this amazing list. I hope I still have it. But somebody wrote out all the great teams in London, and, you know, in the mid 90s, there weren't any Americans who had gone over to the UK at all. So I was fortunate enough that basically I think it was a bit of an oddity to have an American ring you up. So every single creative team, if you can imagine, like actually picked up the phone and took me to the pub and talked to me. And I met every single great creative team in that one visit. They, you know, and they helped me immensely, and just to kind of have someone to talk to and land there. And I mean, I'll never forget that. Like everybody from Dave Dye to Chris Palmer. I mean, I just looking through your list, the podcast, Danny Kleiman, like every single person you've interviewed graciously opened their doors. But it was Robert that actually took me on and probably illegally gave me a job at GTT. And that was the beginning. And, you know, as all creatives know, you know, when you find somebody that you can truly collaborate with, you're sort of off and running. And that was Robert and I. We just, you know, we still get along like a house on fire, and anything was possible. And he, you know, he kind of picked me out of the creative department to be his partner at Mother.
And so would you have been at GGT around sort of 95, 96 then? Or 90?
Exactly. So I literally saw Robert come up from the account man floor, and he and Japon Jones started running the creative department. And I was probably hired, you know, maybe a few days after that happened.
Well, I'm think the reason I asked you that question is because I'm now weirdly thinking you may have given me a crit, because I was at Watford in 95, 96. And I remember we had the occasional crit in GGT in the basement, I think. And there'd be bit, well, crits were crits. But so maybe you gave me a crit then, I think, if that's possible.
That's awesome.
Okay.
I love that idea. Well, GGT is an amazing place. Have you interviewed a lot of the people that were there for Dave Trott?
Not a huge amount, to be honest, because Dave Dye interviews some people, and he knows more of that time when Dave was there, and he knows the right people to speak to. But I think he's interviewed Dave Waters, for instance, and I'd love to get hold of Steve Henry. But I've been a bit lazy, to be perfectly honest.
Right. Well, I mean, GGT is just, there's a lot of, there's so many great stories that come from that. And I was so honored to work there. I mean, I just got to tell you one of the stories that I loved, because obviously I've already told you the story about my, my college program, how we had this cut, right? There were 5,000 of us, and then there were five of us. So, the way that I've heard the story is that Dave Trott had this dot system. And basically, if you got three dots, you were out, and you just got them on your door. And it reminded me so much of the program. So basically, if you showed up with shite work, you were given a dot. If you didn't try on something, so you had to come into work each day, and you could lose your job. But I also liked his other story, which is, you know, he really obviously appreciated how hard all the people in his creative department worked. And someone from the accounting department had figured out that there was this amazing tax break on company cars. So, of course, he didn't want to compensate any of the creatives. He had them on really, really low pay. But he figured out, well, why don't we give all these creative guys these outrageous cars? So GGT actually went out and bought them just obnoxious cars. And the entire creative department had these really sick rides. And then apparently they were all parked in the car park because none of them could afford the petrol to drive them, which hadn't been factored into it. But there's a... yeah, it was really great to land there because that agency really stood for a lot of the creative principles that I believed in. And I never got to meet Dave Trott when I was over there, but he's someone that I really respect, you know, through all the stories and that I've heard and everything that he's done to help our industry.
Yeah, and he's still doing it now with his blogs and things like that as well. And I've gotten to know Dave really well. So
yeah, I mean, so one of the people that worked for him, Dave Cook, he's now in the States, but he's English. He's the one who gave me that list of creatives, everybody that was good over there, and helped me. I really think if it wasn't for him, there's no way I would have been able to kind of penetrate the market over there and really get connected to everyone.
Well, it's also interesting because Dave Trott's time at GGT was amazing. And then there was that sort of other time when Graham Fink and Tim Mellors ran it. And I wasn't in advertising at that time, but I got the impression something strange happened to transition from one GGT to the next. And then I guess you were in GGT 3.0 when Tim and Graham had gone.
Right. So, I mean, I think it's cool that you're remembering a lot of that because imagine what Robert had to face, right? I mean, he was an account man. Could you imagine coming after Graham Fink?
Well, I think Dave Dye's about to interview Graham Fink, and I've had this little email conversation with him myself, and he comes across really, really nice. And we both were chatting about how it's interesting, the legend of Graham Fink is quite different to the emails we're both having at the moment. So, yeah, I mean, without wanting to in any way cast aspersions on Graham's character, his reputation at that time was quite firebrandy.
Absolutely, yes. So, you know, it just tells you a little bit of what Robert had to deal with in terms of, I don't know what Robert was thinking, how he could kind of take over that agency, but sure enough, he did it.
Yeah, and I mean that's pretty amazing. I mean, I don't know if we should hang on that part of the conversation or go, how did you and Mark and Robert end up going from there to Mother? Because it sounds like the situation's so odd. I don't mean in a bad way. I mean, going from, you've just arrived at GDT. Robert used to be an account person. GDT sort of happening. How does what's effectively been the greatest agency in England over probably the last 15, 20 years happen out of that sort of cauldron?
Right. Well, you know, I think of it now because I obviously run my own shop, and I was 27 years old, and I was so fortunate because Robert believed in me. I mean, it was the first time I worked at a lot of great agencies, done a lot of great work, but it was the first time that someone really validated me, and Robert actually listened and implemented a lot of my ideas and had a lot of time for the ideas that I came up with in terms of an ad agency, which is absolutely crazy to think about because I was 27 years old. I mean, I have so many 27-year-olds working for me now, and every day I try to think, you know, spend more time with these people, listen to them more, do more of their ideas, because, you know, even down to the name of Mother. So, I mean, you can look back at the publications and what they printed, but the original name for the company was Tom, Dick, and Harry. That's what Robert called it. It was released. And I was like, absolutely not. And I took him through the logic about why it would not be named that, why that was a terrible name and blah, blah, blah. And he listened to me. So I think that had a large part of it. And I mean, Mark, I had also worked with in the States at Margiotis Fertitas Weiss. So Mark and I had a relationship already. And I think the three of us knew that in this industry, you always have to keep moving. There can be no rear view mirror. And that was a similar thread that all three of us had that really helped us create the agency. Now, I do want to point out that in London at that time, just being brave in itself and doing what we did was enough to kind of shake up the environment because like I originally said, the recession was still happening. It was the back end of it. So you had a lot of very tight sphincters, and there was a lot of like safety in the industry, right? And we were the enfant terrible. We were the people that were willing to kind of come in and say, hey, can't we be more nimble? Can't we actually work with people? Can't we change brands and be more refreshing? So there weren't a lot of people in that market doing it. And there were a lot of people wanting an ad agency like that. So it was very straightforward in some ways.
Can we just very quickly go back to the name part of it? First, why can you explain why Tom, Dick, and Harry is a bad name, but also where Mother came about? Because if there's one thing that Mother, I mean, aside from all the great work, Mother changed the way advertising agencies were named, really, from three blokes' names to Mother, and everything now from Inferno and Iris and whatever else stemmed, I believe, from the success of Mother. So where did that come from, and why is Tom, Dick, and Harry so bad?
Okay, well, Tom, Dick, and Harry was a joke, which I think, you know, I mean, basically what Robert was trying to say is, all we have are all these names on the door, right? And so that was kind of his joke to that. So it's Tom, Dick, and Harry. It's your first name. It's not your surname. And just having a bit of laugh at it, which I totally get. I just didn't see the longevity to it. And I also thought that to really make this agency great, we have to do so much more for the creatives. And I know that any account man listening to this is going to hate this, but I truly believe that the creative core of an agency is what makes an agency. And so you need a word that really lets creatives be creatives. And what does that mean? Well, you have to be able to create more than just advertising bits and pieces. I thought there was so much more that ad agency, so much more potential energy that creatives had. And so what if we named our company something that could also be on a pub, that could also be a movie, that could be a product? And these sorts of things hadn't been done at that time. So it was really important to me to not sound like a solicitor, to sound like something that gave creatives infinite ideas. And so I just liked the fact that we could make toys, we could own a bake shop, and that anything was possible.
Yeah, and you did make toys. Did you own a bake shop as well?
I don't think so, but we made a lot of toys, which we made a lot of noise. So yeah.
Okay, so you've made the decision. You've got the name Mother. I don't know where your first premises were, but how was the very beginning of Mother? What was that like?
It was just like any startup. It was incredibly fun. I mean, you have to remember, the thing that helped us to launch was, of course, a client, and that was Channel 5, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, anybody listening to this that's not from Britain might not know that there were only four TV stations. And I don't know if satellite really existed, but no one talked about it. It was just these four TV stations. And this was the launch of a fifth television station. I mean, probably, you know, some of the biggest news in the country. And that was our first project. So it wasn't as if we started up and just sat in a room together and sort of said, what are we going to work on now? We were literally off to the races to launch a television station. I mean, we were working with the Spice Girls. There were five of them, in case you're missing the connection of why we would have them. But it was incredibly exhilarating. I mean, we had a huge outdoor campaign. We were working with the Spice Girls. We were working with Jack Daugherty. We were doing an incredible amount of work. And, you know, creatives love nothing more than that, right? We were making things. And so that's a great way to bring a group of people together.
And how did you get Channel 5 to believe that you would be the people that they could entrust with something as important as their initial launch?
Well, it's all Robert. I mean, this whole business all comes down to connections and friends. And, you know, David, the marketing director at Channel 5, was Robert's best mate. And, you know, I think that those relationships, it's all about people, right? And he knew that Robert would be able to launch that television station with him. And then we got the Dutchman involved, Eric Kessels and Johan Kramer, who we worked with them at GGT as well. And they're amazing brains, and we were able to bring them in that kind of co-collaboration just to make ourselves bigger. And, you know, I think the English are a lot better at understanding what creativity can do to fuel something.
Absolutely. So was there a point where you felt that Mother became big inverted commas Mother, as in the Mother that we all know and is thought to be one of the great creative agencies of kind of recent years? Did that come slowly, or was there a big jump that made you think, yeah, this is really working?
It happened immediately. I mean, I think we were a huge splash in England, something that the country really needed. And it was pretty immediate. It was very immediate.
Okay. And then, so how did it work internally? Were you a creative director or the creative director, or how did that work with Mark as well?
Well, so in the beginning, you know, as in most shops, when they start, you're a bit precious about the work because everything you make will dictate not only your future, but your reputation. So we were incredibly hands-on in the beginning. In fact, we didn't really have a creative department. So the work that came out of there for the first 4 years was Mark Robert and I and Franklin Tipton and a few others, but mostly that core group of people. And so, yeah, it was just really important to kind of stay close to the work.
And when you say Mark Robert and I mean, is Robert being a creative director? I'm excuse my naivety, because he started as an account person. And I've always, in my head, I've heard of, you know, he and Mark get lumped together in a way. How did that dynamic work?
Well, I mean, it's hard to talk about Robert. I mean, I'll just, you know, kind of seem like this huge fan, and I know the English hate all this kind of American talk, but he's truly genius. I mean, he is an insane writer. He is so great. I mean, he understands the construct. He understands a 30 or whatever you guys have, 40-second spot. He knows how the structure works. He knows how the timing works. He's a comedy genius. I mean, he knows how long a joke takes, how you have to set it up. Everything. I mean, my partner, Franklin, and I learned everything from him. I mean, and I'm talking about creativity, not just, we learned a lot about business as well, an insane amount about business, but he's just one of those weird people who can do, wear multiple hats and just do it really, really well. I still talk to him a bit. You know, obviously he probably doesn't write the ads today, but when we started, you know, he wrote a hell of a lot, and I'm sure that his name doesn't get put on a lot of things that he still helps with, because not only does he understand logic, comedy timing, writing, he probably just walks by and effortlessly helps people and isn't attributed to any of the work. That would be my guess.
Great. And was there anything else that you particularly set forward in Mother? And I'm thinking a little bit about the gender thing here, because Mother did have some great female creatives in the early days, and obviously I think it's something that is part of your agency now. Was that an influence you wanted to have over what it was, and even its name, I guess?
You know, that really wasn't a topic at the time, and not really something that I worked towards. It's something I'm really passionate about now, and something I put a lot of effort in with my agency for. But at that time, it wasn't something that people talked about, and I was probably too young to even think about it. Probably the other biggest contribution, I mean, the idea of naming it Mother and really being able to stand for not just this house of commerce. And what I mean by that is, let's not be another ad agency, but let's truly affect pop culture. I mean, that's something I was really passionate about. And the other thing that I was hugely passionate about, and I think that I had a big effect on the agency for, was making everyone there part of the production. And what I mean by that is, I basically did not like account men, and I liked account men if you had ideas and you could contribute, but I call them phone dialers. And if you are a phone dialer and that's what you do, there was no place at Mother for you. And so because of that, we changed a lot of the structure and made people producers and creatives. And I really think it was just more about giving people permission to create, because I don't think there's uncreative people and creative people, but it's more about just giving them permission and a license to make things. And I think anybody's, you know, capable of that. But it was really important to me that anybody that joined had that mindset. So just to give you an example, we did not have secretaries there. So we had, instead of doing that, I brought in junior teams and made them answer the phones for us. and then, you know, so you always had to have another job. And that's really common now, you know, for people to work across different verticals. But that was also really important to me. I mean, you got to remember that the creatives in the mid-90s, that was all they did. You sat in an office and you just came up with, you know, end lines and headlines. And I wanted to work in a much more integrated way, that you could produce your own film. You could be the cameraman. You needed to have some of these other core skills, because I really believe that it made people better creatives to kind of have that empathy of doing other jobs. So that was really important to me as well.
One other thing about that was sort of unique to Mother, which I think is interesting in terms of you talking about the primacy of the creative, is that there weren't any individual kind of creative credits. Was the thinking behind that the fact that there were so many people responsible that it wasn't really the creative, or why was that a decision you made?
I mean, so that, you know, at that time we didn't really have a creative department, so it's not like we were leaving anybody out. and then I think also it was just in the beginning, it was a little bit part of just being a startup, and we were scared that anybody, we were scared of people poaching, which was a big thing in England. And literally, I mean, it probably seems like this big mysterious thing, but we didn't want anybody to know who worked for us. We were scared there were going to be a million copycat agencies that started up. And we were probably just new and trying to preserve that. That's how I remember it.
Okay. And so you did 4 years there. It must have been pretty amazing. 4 years. I mean, what was it like once you'd kind of, I guess, after the startup-y time, although I guess that does last a little while, when you were getting into the third and fourth year, did you feel like this is really becoming a proper full-on success?
Absolutely. I mean, once we changed spaces, so we were in Soho Square, and like sort of in a really bad bed sit, so to speak, with one toilet. And after we moved, that's when we really felt like an ad agency, like this was going to happen. We were going to get more clients. And that was real. I think there was no looking back after that.
Yeah, I remember. So that was moving to Farringdon, where you had like the caravan in the front and stuff like that.
Clerkenwell, yeah.
Clerkenwell, sorry, yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. So how many years in was that?
We moved there pretty quickly, I would say within the first year.
Okay. And if you did 4 years there, it sounds like you'd still be riding the huge crest of the incredibly successful wave that's Mother. Why was it 4 years?
In terms of why didn't it last longer?
Yeah, I'm euphemistically being very British and going, I don't know if there's an awkward conversation to be had.
No, there's not actually. I mean, so I think it was just a mix of, I wanted to become a mom, so right. I ended up having two kids after that. And to be honest, you know, I wasn't clever enough to sort of say, you know, if I was doing that now, of course I'd be like, I'm the person who's going to start Mother in the States, and here's how I'm going to do it. And I would have just told Robert, this is how to make it happen. And I didn't have those skills, to be honest. And it's still really hard for me. It was really hard to leave, but it was sort of a partner thing, and it was the right time for my partner to leave. And I, to be honest, I just didn't want to be one of those old kind of crotchety women in advertising that didn't have a family and that all I had were my ads. And I thought that sounded a bit grim. And it seemed like that's where I was headed. And I had a really awesome partner, and I felt like I kind of had to make a choice, which sounds terrible. Like I said, if I had a few more years under my belt and I was a bit older, I think I could have figured it out and played it so much better. And I just couldn't figure out how to make it work. And I, you know, at that point I was getting a bit older, and I knew that I needed to make a decision about, you know, having a family or not. And that's what I went off and did.
Okay. So when what made you then want to get back in, or what was the point at which you felt after the family to return to advertising?
Oh, I didn't want to get back into it. I mean, to be honest, it was, you know, there was no sort of like bad story about it, you know, anything that happened, but I guess the hard part was I didn't really want to leave. So it was emotionally very hard for me, because when I started Mother, I absolutely put everything I had into it. So I sort of thought, you know, I didn't have the perspective of, oh, you might have multiple agencies. I worked 24/7 on Mother. I mean, I literally worked every night to make that place amazing. And I thought it was going to be, you know, my agency for the rest of my life. So it was stifling. It was almost undoable to try and start another agency. It absolutely was not my idea. I was begged to do it. I didn't want to do it. I honestly thought I had no more creative ideas left. I took everything that I had learned across the globe and put it into Mother. As a creative, it was the place that I thought every creative would want to work. Every idea that I thought was broken at every other shop, I tried to change. And so the thought of trying to make another agency, I thought was undoable.
I think that's a really interesting perspective on everything that's broken and you change. Because I think advertising is so guilty of staying in its kind of rut of this is how we do things and this is the way things have to be and we can't change this and we can't change that. And I think having been in advertising just about around that time, Mother was this incredible breath of fresh air, which I think had a huge influence in the agencies after it. So I think it wasn't just what you did in terms of how Mother could be, but I think what agencies then became in the following time that was compounded by the digital revolution must have
absolutely
in some way been rooted there. So what kind of time are we talking about in terms of how long you spent becoming a mother rather than someone at Mother?
It was 5 years that I was away from the industry.
Okay. And then as you said, you didn't want to get back in. What made you then get back in? Was that a financial decision?
Sorry, Ben, are you having any audio connections? I just am
no,
bugging out a little bit. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me? I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that.
No, I jumped into motherhood. I listened to some of your other podcasts, and I heard a lot of the women talk about how they needed to get back into the advertising world, and I quite felt the opposite. I was able to channel so much of my creativity towards my kids, and I found it incredibly rewarding, and I actually love that job so much. It was really hard for me to get back into the industry, and like I said, I think it's really different if it's something that you want to do and you want to get back in. It's probably effortless for people, and in my case, it was the exact opposite, but now I'm 7 years back in and I absolutely love it. And I can't imagine how I ever didn't want to get back into it. And I think to myself on a daily basis, like, by God, what would I be doing right now? I absolutely love it, but it was insanely hard for me and probably took me, about a year or so to fully, get back into it and remember what I love so much about it, and also be able to balance my life. How do you give so much to your kids and also be able to give a lot to your work? Because I'm definitely one of those people that works too hard. I never stop thinking about the project that I'm working on. So I've learned how to combine those things, and I think I'm really good at it now. I still am always solving things every day, whether it be financial things at my company, structural things, or big creative problems. And I'm able to do that while I kind of integrate real life. Like for me, I don't turn on and turn off. everything kind of melds together, and right now that's kind of a beautiful space for me. And it's taken a bit of work, but it's been great.
Yeah, and you mentioned the other women maybe that I've spoken to, but obviously there's a lot of other ones who have either left the industry and not wanted to come back, or wanted to come back in one way and not another. And it's obviously something that's more particular to women than men. When you were making that decision, did you think, oh, well, so there's all these choices. I could work for another agency. I could have my own agency. How did you make the decision of how you wanted to get back in, and in what form?
Right. So I actually, once again, I feel like I've gotten so many amazing bounces. Advertising's been incredibly good to me. And my partner that I've spoken a lot about, Franklin Tipton, made it very easy for me. So he wanted to start an agency, because I don't know how much people are talking about this, but he was very fearful of not being able to do that. And what I mean by that is it's an age thing, right? And so, you know, we're getting to be, I hate to say it, like 50 years old, right? We're headed towards that age. And he is incredibly passionate about making things and creating things. And he started to notice that there are no old people in our industry. And he sort of said to me, shit, we've got to make a place for ourselves to work, because I can't imagine not doing this. And, you know, at the time, you know, 7 years ago, that was it was a very hard concept to understand for me. But thank God I kind of, you know, bought into that and helped him. And he said, I can't think of anybody else who knows more about how to do this, because I truly work side by side with Robert. And even at that time, obviously at 27, I would have taken a million more notes, because when you're 27, you don't think to yourself, I'm going to start a business, or at least I didn't. And I should be writing all this down. But luckily I had spent enough time working side by side with him that I was able to just learn so much from him about how to run a business. And then also the creative part of it. I mean, I feel like being able to work that closely with someone, I mean, I really hold him responsible for like everything that I learned creatively as well, because it's different to be creative than to actually make something. And one of the things that my agency now is so successful at is craft. We're incredibly passionate about craft, and that's something that I practiced a lot in the UK, and I think that I got very good at. So sorry, I lost my thread there. I forgot the question you asked me, but
I think it was sort of about
about how I got into it. Yeah, sorry. So my partner Franklin, you know, came to me and asked me to start this agency with him, and it wasn't straightforward. It was not straightforward, but it is now. And it was really, thankfully, the best decision I made.
And you said there were a bunch of things, obviously, that you did learn from Robert. So in starting your own place afterwards, were there things that mistakes you tried to avoid this time? Were there things that you didn't want to do?
Well, in some ways, anything that I learned there, I really can't apply to this market. I mean, apparently I just found out yesterday that San Francisco is the least creative place on the universe in terms of the art world. Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I said, which maybe that's why we stand out here. So there was so little that I could apply to this environment, because, you know, when we started Mother, it was really effortless in terms of we had clients come to us because they had no alternative. They wanted to work with people who were going to affect their business and who were creative. So when we had meetings at Mother, they were incredibly fun. People knew why they were coming to our shop. Mm-hmm. We never had meetings that ended in
doubt or whether we had to wonder if we got the business. Everybody that walked in wanted some of our stuff, right? They wanted our mojo. So it was great. The only thing we had to do was actually do great work. So it was, in the beginning, just absolutely genius. And I'm in a marketplace now that's extremely competitive. You know, everything that's happening in the digital space with performance marketing, it's just a completely different time, a completely different world. So I would say that the things that I learned from Robert were more about just running a great business, but I'm not necessarily able to apply a lot of the creative ad agency things. I mean, Robert's a truly great business person. And so I very well could have opened up, you know, a chemical manufacturing company and been able to kind of apply those skills to it. So those are the things that I was really able to take away.
Okay. And now I've asked the question about why Mother, why Odysseus's arms then?
You mean in terms of the name itself, or why does the world need another ad agency?
Well, I think in this question, just the name, because I was thinking there must be some classical reference that I'm missing here. Is there?
Well, Odysseus, as everyone knows, is the dude who invented the Trojan horse. So, you know, he took this beautiful, weird idea that what a giant army couldn't do, which was kind of take down a walled city like you could do with a great idea. And so I think that that's kind of the inception of it. And then the arms part, basically, has to do with our time in England and making it sound like a pub. I didn't want to just call it Odysseus. And so, we, you know, we really want, one of the big missions is to, we want to bring a pub over from the UK and put it, that's kind of like our reception area with a great dog and like an actual English guy to kind of pour the pints and all that kind of stuff. So that's the arms part, you know, Bedford Arms, Red Lion Arms, whatever pub you like. And Odysseus just didn't sound right on its own. So that's kind of the story behind the name. But it's really that Trojan horse story is a good one.
Yeah, it's good. And it's interesting that you're saying that part of what created it was whether it's future-proofing yourself in an industry that is very ageist, but also I think that the gender thing has come in a little bit more. When I'm reading some of the stuff on your website, it does feel that's more important. So it feels like there are a bunch of things that are behind what Odysseus's Arms is. So do you have an overall long-term mission for it?
Well, I think with Mother and all of the places that I've worked, it's about reinventing things and pushing things forward. And I think that that's what we're trying to do with our agency, is very much not to just be another agency, but think about how we can impact how we're communicating to people, thinking about how our ideas can become part of pop culture. So that's always been a theme and something that's important with anything that I put my name on, for sure.
Cool. And talking of pop culture, I mean, when I was looking at your bio that's on your site, how did you end up getting involved in Caitlyn Jenner's, public launch, as it were?
Well, we were really fortunate because since we're a small shop, they were terrified to give that project even to anyone internally at NBC, because we were working with a lot of the Kardashians' home video footage, and we basically had so much access to Caitlyn's world. We went to her house and filmed, and so we were the only agency that they trusted to work with it. We had to work in complete lockdown with the footage and with her. And so because we were small and because, you know, we were incredibly trusted with this project, that's how we got chosen to work on it. We also do a lot of work for Amnesty International in the U.S. So they knew that we were able to handle really sensitive topics. And we actually really help them figure out, you know, if you think about all of the media in this country, the way that this story was handled was so sensitive. It could have, you know, just been very scandalous. And, you know, we early on in the project, we read this statistic that 41% of transgender people commit suicide, and that really impacted us. You know, we knew from the beginning that this story could go either way, the way that people either embrace Caitlin or not. And we went to the network and we said, you have a real opportunity here to help a lot of people globally with this. And, you know, we have this whole reel of people, vloggers, who after our work was released, got on and said, whether it be like mothers or people themselves, like, you made this topic legitimate, right? And I think as a creative, everyone wants to be able to impact a topic in that way. And thankfully, we were able to do that and to make transgender acceptable and not just kind of this shit show, right? Mm. And it was incredibly rewarding to work on, and we're really glad that NBC partnered with us and listened to us about, you know, this isn't about network ratings, but this is an opportunity to change the way the entire world thinks about and accepts transgender people.
Yeah, and I think that's been borne out by the conversation since. It does feel like we're in a different world in terms of how transgender people are viewed, you know, between Caitlin and things like Transparent as well. I think.
Right, and I think that everyone needs to remember, I think this is hard for people to understand. So Caitlin, I think she's 65 right now. I can't remember how old she was when we did the 63 or something. So she grew up in a time where she had absolutely not one person to talk to about this. She didn't even know what she was classified as. So she went around, she was very well known after the Olympics as doing a lot of these lecture series. And the only reason she did it, and I know this because I made the mistake of saying, oh, I know today, you know, on the shoot, I said to her, oh, I know today is going to be really, you know, you're going to do great because you've done so much of this public speaking and so forth, and you're so trained at it. And she was like, the only reason I did that is so I could go to these different cities and be myself. So she would go to do these lecture series, and that's where she would get to go out at night as a woman. And,
wow.
So, you know, just being able to work with her, we learned that she never wanted to be a poster child for this. When we worked with her, she had stacks of books about transgender. She had no idea how much this impacted people. She just knew that she didn't feel right in the way that she was had been classified when she was very young. I mean, she knew when she was 5 years old, she just didn't know what it was. I mean, kids today who are five who don't feel like something's a bit off very quickly, you know, are able to find people and understand what they might be going through. So she did not have that. She never wanted to be a poster child for this, and very quickly learned because of her celebrity status that she was going to have to be. So it's very complicated. I think a lot of people just, you know, think she wants to be in that role. And in fact, she really had to rise to the occasion. And during that whole time, in her mind, all she was thinking was, you're kidding me. I can wear high heels, lipstick, and fingernail polish in public. Like, that was her whole, she was like, you're kidding me. This is awesome. So she was completely overwhelmed as a person. I mean, she spent on the shoot, she spent so much time just wanting to show me everything in her closet. almost like a 10-year-old girl, like, look at this dress, and look at that, and look at this handbag, and how much I paid for it, and Kim has this shirt, but I wear it better, and, you know, so, you know, 95% of her brain is being able to be a woman, and the rest of the world has, you know, forced her into this role, which I think we should be thankful that she kind of took the torch and has been able to help so many people. I mean, if you Google it or look at any of the vloggers or the people that she's impacted, it's incredible.
Yeah, I can imagine that's made a huge difference to so many people's lives. Going back to the fact that San Francisco is the least creative agency, least creative city in the history of the world, or something. Obviously, where you are is also in the sort of depths of Silicon Valley, or very close to it, anyway. And also, you do have good agencies like Goodby Silverstein there as well. Do you find it's been an easy enough process to find the people to join your mission and join your agency?
Absolutely. I mean, our agency, you know, we're having a phenomenal time. What's a bit tricky is just the clients within this actual zip code. So we have most of the CMOs aren't actually trained as CMOs, so that's challenging. They were just given that role. And then also, nobody in this zip code actually believes in advertising, and that comes from Amazon. So when Amazon was launched, they were extremely successful with absolutely no advertising. So people, you know, engineers that make something believe that if you need advertising, if you have to use advertising, there must be something wrong with what you've made. So, you know, from a business perspective, we knew that none of our business would really exist here in SF. We just really love living here because it's an incredible place to live. And so we don't really rely on the zip code for much of our business.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, because I'm obviously in California myself, but it feels like that is a true thing to say. Why don't you just make a better product than advertising? But at the same time, advertising does have a part to play, but I guess you must be in this geographical cauldron of some of the most, the word arrogant isn't what I'm thinking of at all here, but it's like people who are very self-confident about what creativity is and does and what tech is, and it must be a sort of magnet for all these sorts of people to come to kind of your part of the world. So to have that as a sort of balance in an agency where, I guess, if you're saying that they embrace their own creativity as people who are making things and making companies, but not seeing what an advertising agency can do, that must be quite an interesting sort of environment to be in terms of a city, is it?
Absolutely. The thing that we're most inspired by, and the reason that we wanted to set up here instead of New York, because my partner and I actually started in New York, and we have a lot of connections there, but the thing that keeps us inspired is that everybody keeps rethinking about the way that things work. I mean, Elon Musk is incredibly inspiring to us. Yeah. The fact that Lyft and Uber have broken down something and fixed something that was in front of all of us that was broken. You couldn't get a ride to the airport, and they just changed that. So we really kind of suck off that kind of energy of how do we change things that are broken and fix them. And so that's a lot of our inspiration that we get from the zip code. The other thing that we do a ton is make things and iterate on things. And I think that especially British advertising, it's so precious. I mean, that's the other thing I think I totally brought to Mother is stop being so precious about these three little words that you wrote on a piece of paper. It's so much more than that. The brand is so much bigger than that. Think beyond just this little idea that you want to sell to your creative director, because you have the potential to affect this huge brand. And so those things in this zip code, I find very inspiring for the work that we do.
And you have done stuff for Facebook and Microsoft and YouTube. So it's not like there's an overall antipathy to the whole thing then.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was a bit tongue in cheek because I think obviously what I would say is the people that recognize what we do just propel so much further and they get it. And so, you know, I was hoping that people would sort of figure that out.
Okay, and I think just to end on, you are the CEO and co-founder of Odysseus Arms. I think that's interesting because very few creative people end up being the CEO. Do you think it's important that you're the person who's driving the entire agency forward in terms of what it is as an entity rather than just the creative department?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, it sounds really corny, but everything starts at the top, and so it's really important to me to set a good example of how our company is going to affect things, how we're going to change things, how we're going to change diversity within this industry to be more representative of the people who actually buy things. I mean, 80% of people buying things are women, right? Yeah. And so I spend a lot of time trying to get women into this industry. I mean, you asked me about whether I did that at Mother, and my answer was no, because I didn't really understand how helping people get into the industry could impact it. And, you know, I talked to Jonathan Mildenhall at Airbnb a lot about this, and a lot of us are trying to come together, and instead of just talking about how to bring diversity into our industry, actually doing it and putting rubber to road and getting people into ad agencies to make that happen. So it's a passion of mine now.
That's great. Well, I mean, I think it, both in terms of Mother and Odysseus Arms, there's some really fascinating things to learn and be inspired by what you've said. I don't know if there was anything else you wanted to say. We obviously haven't touched on the future really at all, but that's fine as far as I'm concerned. But if you wanted to say anything, then go ahead.
Oh, no, I actually, I've enjoyed, it's been really hard, like I said, to prepare it all for this podcast, because you've really made me dig back into the old days for this, so that was very challenging, and yeah, most of the time I'm being asked to speak about things. I have to go to Advertising Week in another a week and a half and talk about 6-second ads.
Oh my
That's
God.
The new format for the NFL. And so, yeah, that's usually the kind of subject matter that I'm contemplating.
Yeah, good luck with that. okay, well, I'll get this together and put it up soon. And if there's anything you forgot or you want me to change or anything like that, let me know. But otherwise, thanks so much for taking the time, Libby.
Awesome, Ben. Good luck with everything. And, you know, if you ever need ideas for people, let me know, or anything else I can do to help. And maybe when I'm in LA, we could get together and get some food.
That'd be great. Yeah, let me know. Okay.
Awesome. Thanks, okay. Ben.
Thanks, Libby. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is a podcast that watch Christmas.